Genesis chapter 22, and we'll spend some time together this evening. And while you're opening your Bible and getting settled, we welcome all of you, and I am happy to be with you tonight. I've enjoyed this week with you very, very much. I have tried to express that from night to night, and let me say again this evening that I very much appreciate the invitation to have been with you once again, and I have particularly enjoyed the things that we've been studying about this week. This is, as we have mentioned, this has been the theme that we have pursued in our church family at Temple Terrace during 2019, and we have divided that into four sections during the year, and I've been very happy to talk about that theme with you and trust that the things that we've talked about have been beneficial in some way. I have very much enjoyed renewing our acquaintance together. Some of you I've met for the very first time this week, and that's been a pleasure, and I thank all of you. Thank you to your shepherds for their invitation. I've enjoyed being with them again and with Tyler this week. And with all of you. Thank you to all of you who've had me into your home this week or taken me somewhere for a meal and for that opportunity to get to visit a little bit. I've enjoyed that an awful lot, getting to know you better. And I appreciate very, very much the wonderful way that you've listened from night to night. You have just honed in and followed along, and many of you have taken notes on the sheet, but you've had such kind things to say this week, encouraging things, and I am very, very grateful for that. I've enjoyed this time with you immensely. And it's interesting, it's not everywhere that I go in a gospel meeting. I'll tell you the truth. It's not everywhere that I go in a gospel meeting that I experience all four seasons of the year in 4 days. And yet, here we are. This has been something this week. And so, Lord willing, we'll return tomorrow to the land of endless summer, where it just we have four seasons: summer, 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 and summer. Somebody asked me this fall. They said, "Do your leaves down in Florida? Do your leaves change colors during the fall?" And I said, "Well, yes, they do. They change from dark green to light green, and that's about the extent of that." I miss, after all these years, I miss very much the fall in Indiana. There is just nothing better than that. And so I think about that every year. I've enjoyed being with you this week so very, very much. You know, there are two songs that we sing in our churches that are really the exact opposite of each other. We sing a song that says, "Troublesome times are here, filling men's hearts with fear." Now, on the other hand, we will sing in our churches the song that says, "I'm happy today. I'm happy today in Jesus Christ. I am happy today." Those two songs are just about as far apart as any two songs could ever be. And yet, both of them certainly are true. We have much to be happy about. We are a blessed people, even in the worst of times in our lives. We have so very much given us of God that is, in fact, a profound blessing of which we can be happy. On the other side of the equation, the reality is that we do live in a fallen world, and because of that, there are challenges that are a part of life. In fact, they are a part of every single life. It may be obstacle courses in the military, or entrance exams, or final exams in college. It may be parents who are trying to raise their kids, or grown adult kids who are trying to make provision for aged parents and their care. It may be poor health, or it may be a poor relationship, or poor finances. But challenges come in all shapes and sizes, and they come to each and every one of us. Now, the most daunting challenge, oftentimes, is the challenge of trusting God, walking with God when times are tough. It's walking with God when we are walking home from a funeral, or when we are walking home from a diagnosis that is devastating, or when we are walking home from a divorce, or it may be the rebellion of a child, or the failure of a business, or the hurt that is inflicted on us that seemingly will not heal. Challenges are everywhere. Tonight, we want to go to the life of Abraham. The life of Abraham in Genesis 22. And the life of Abraham is a life that faced one obstacle after another. Now, before we talk about that, and before we talk about Abraham, I want tonight for us to dispel three myths about challenges of life. And I think we need to get these out of the way before we get really where we are going. Here's myth number one. Myth number one is that as we get older, things will get easier. We tell ourselves that. I think sometimes we tell ourselves that in order just to keep our sanity. That as we get older, everything will be better. And so we start that early on. If we can just get these kids out of diapers, and then if we can get them out of the terrible twos, and then if we can get them through middle school, and then if we can get them through those years where they're learning how to drive, and then when they're dating, if we can get them through college, and we're always thinking that if we can just get to the next point in life, everything is going to be a little bit easier and a little bit better. And we think as we get older, everything will be a little bit easier. Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, ask the senior saints among us. Ask them about using technology. Ask them about filling out complicated forms. Ask them about memory and energy slipping away and about the challenges that become more formidable oftentimes as we age rather than easier. Myth number one, as we get older, things get easier. It's just not always true. Myth number two, as we get older, we will have more time. And we tell ourselves that as well. We tell ourselves that once we retire, we're going to have all the time in the world. But if you will talk to the retired people in your church, what you will consistently hear is they say, I don't know how I ever had time to work. And it just seems to, that is just kind of a common thought, isn't it? And then myth number three, as we get older, the challenges to our faith subside. As we get older, the challenges to our faith will subside. About 3 weeks ago, I saw a commercial for a new Rambo movie, Sylvester Stallone playing Rambo once again. Rambo, by this point in time, should be on a walker in a nursing home, right? Maybe that movie is designed to say that there are always going to be challenges, that you never get beyond that, that you never outgrow that. I think that one day, we believe that one day, we'll get too old for Satan to be worried about us. He will figure that he's lost us for good, and so maybe he'll just leave us alone. And on the other hand, we'll be so old that God really won't have any significant work for us to do, and so maybe we can just kind of float and drift along until finally we leave this world. But that's just not true. As we get older, the challenges to our faith subside. Ladies and gentlemen, the day that you were baptized, your picture went up on the post office wall in hell. And he, our adversary, the devil, is going to be after you until you draw your very last breath. Our study of Abraham tonight will challenge those assumptions. The challenges for Abraham never ended. Now, I'm talking to good Bible students tonight who know about Abraham and know the story of Abraham. And even if you're relatively new to faith, you will understand the story as we walk our way through it tonight. We're not going to take the time to read that lengthy section in Genesis 22. But again, as we talk our way through it tonight, you'll be familiar with the story. And even if you are not very familiar with the story, you will get the big picture as we walk through it this evening. I want to tell you that Abraham's life was one that was full of challenges from day one. And so by God, he was challenged to leave his home. Now, there are two important factors about that. One is that he obeyed by faith. In fact, in Hebrews 11, the beginning of verse 8, listen to what it says. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. I tell you what's interesting about that is that God said, I want you to get up, I want you to go, I want you to move. Great. Where are we going? Not going to tell you. And yet, he got up and he went. He didn't know where he was going. He didn't have GPS, he didn't have a map, he didn't have Zillow on his phone so he could check out neighborhoods where he was going and school districts where he might want his kids to be. He didn't have any of that. The only direction that he had was, as we often sing, he just had to trust and obey. I've traveled a lot of places in this world, both domestically and abroad. There are a lot of places that I would be very interested in going back and seeing again. There are some places I've been that I have no interest of going back to at all. Abraham had no choice about any of that. He didn't know where he was going, but he trusted. He trusted that God knew the way. And so he put his faith in that. And then secondly, he lived as a nomad. It would be one thing if God said, look, get up. I want you to move. I've got a plan for you. But then he could go to a place and he could stay at a place for maybe 6 months or a year and then move on. But he lived as a nomad. The text specifically says that he lived in tents. That was a far cry from where he lived in Ur of the Chaldees. In Ur of the Chaldees, excavation work and archaeology tell us that it was a well-established place. It was a modern place for its day. That it was a well-to-do area to live in. That there were permanent homes in the Ur of the Chaldees, and they were advanced homes. Some of them even had running water. And so Abraham was a wealthy man living in a wealthy place, in a place of some comfort. And God tells him, I want you to leave your roots and your heritage and your home and your life. And I want you to be on the move from now on. Nothing's going to be permanent in your life. Nothing's going to be settled at all. And there was no promise from God. There was not a single promise from God that it was going to change. Nowhere did God ever say, Abraham, if you'll just do this for a little while, I promise you that I'll let you settle down, then better things will be ahead. God never does that. He was challenged to leave his home. Secondly, he was challenged with a child. Now, there are two sides of that. They have the child of promise, Isaac. But there are a couple of things about that. One, he and Sarah were far past their childbearing years. And so this is a miracle. This is a matter of trust and faith. And they stagger at the promise of God a little bit, but then they pull themselves together to the point that Hebrews 11 says that they got beyond all of that. And then they had the challenge of raising a child when they were old. Now, that's a challenge. Grandparents, those of us who are grandparents, when we keep our grandkids for two or three days when they're little, when we give them back to their mom and dad, what do we all say? We all say exactly the same thing. There's a reason why God has young people have little children, right? Because this is a challenge. I mean, this is hard. It's harder when you're older. And yet Abraham and Sarah, they are very old. And they've got to raise a child. But then, here's our story for tonight. The child of promise for whom Abraham and Sarah waited, Abraham is called to sacrifice his son. That's the story of Genesis 22. That Abraham is called by God to sacrifice his God. Now that, no doubt, by far, was the most difficult challenge that Abraham would ever face. He is almost 120 years old, leaving Ur of the Chaldees, and that comfortable home and that wealth that he enjoyed there was nothing in comparison to sacrificing his son. The first 12 words of Genesis 22 simply are, Now it came to pass that after these things, God tested Abraham. God tested Abraham. God tested Abraham. Think about that language, ladies and gentlemen. Products are tested before they are put on the markets. Drugs are tested before they are sold for public use. Students are tested before they are awarded a diploma in college. And God's children are tested to prove what we are made of. But this will be a formidable test. In fact, there will be intensifying statements to try to impress upon our minds how grave this test was for Abraham. And so the text will say that God says, take your son, your only son, whom you love, even Isaac. Take your boy, take your only son. Take your only son that you love. Unless you think that maybe you could sacrifice Ishmael in this, take your son whom you love, Isaac. And this is the one that is to be made a burnt offering, a sacrifice offered to God. Now, I want you to notice, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time in the English arrangement of our Bibles, in the way that they are organized, with Genesis coming first, this is the first time that the word love is used in our Bibles, in the way they are arranged. And it's interesting, the first time that the word love is used in our English Bibles in the book of Genesis, it is attached to the concept of sacrifice, as if God was wanting us to know from the beginning that love and sacrifice will go together. Now, it's interesting, the first time the word is used in the New Testament is in Matthew 3 and 17. At the baptism of John the Baptizer, suddenly a voice came from heaven saying, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. And you see love as a constituent element of beloved. And that son will be sacrificed as well. And so it's as if God is trying to imply, teach us, that love and sacrifice will be forever tied together. So what do you do? God says, I want you to take your son, your only son, whom you love, even Isaac, and I want you to sacrifice him to me. What would you do about that? The text says in Genesis 22 that Abraham arose early in the morning, that obedience was his first response. Listen to that, ladies and gentlemen. Obedience was Abraham's first response. this was not an episode of What Would You Do? I've never seen that program, but I've seen the commercials. I know that on ABC, there is this program called What Would You Do? And they'll do things like they'll take somebody's wallet and put it in a public place. So they'll leave some money in a public place. And it's a moral dilemma here. What would you do when you find that? Do you do the right thing? What do you do? But this isn't a hypothetical situation. This isn't pretend. This is real. Take your son, your only son whom you love, even Isaac. What would you do about that? And I tell you, we don't know what we would do about that. Now, we discussed that. So, if we're studying Genesis 22 in a Bible class, we will talk about that. What would you do? What would you do if God told you to do that with your son? And we'll kick that around a little bit. We'll talk about what we would do and how we would respond to that. Sometimes we'll do that in a Lord's Supper talk. We'll talk about sacrificing a son, God sacrificing his son, Abraham sacrificing his son, and we will talk about what we would do about that. But the fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, all that is talk. We don't anticipate that God is going to ask us to sacrifice our children. And so whatever we say about that, it's only talk. It's only theory. It's only hypothetical. But for Abraham, this was real. The voice of God was unmistakable, and it said, take your son, your only son whom you love, even Isaac, and sacrifice him. And what is amazing about is that Abraham does not say to God, I will get back to you later, I've got to think about that. He doesn't negotiate to save Isaac as he did with Sodom. He doesn't parse God's word to try to find a loophole in what God has commanded. He doesn't ask anybody for advice as to what he ought to do. He simply obeyed God. Now, to his credit, Abraham believed that God would raise Isaac from the dead. I know that's true because of Hebrews 11 and verse 19, that Abraham concluded that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, which also he did in a figurative sense. But don't miss this, ladies and gentlemen. What an amazing leap of faith on Abraham's part. What an amazing leap of faith that Abraham would believe, if I do this, God will raise this boy from the dead. Because he is the boy of promise. And so in Abraham's mind, he had worked this out, that the only way this could happen is that God would raise Isaac from the dead. Now, we read that and we say, well, you know, there are a lot of examples in the Bible of God raising people from the dead. But you know what? There are none. None to this point in time. Abraham's not seen this. He's not heard of this. And we have no record that it has ever happened. It is an amazing act of faith on his part. But he hangs his faith on that. And he begins to walk. And God doesn't stop him on day one of the journey or day two of the journey. He doesn't stop him when he walks away from the servant, and Abraham does. He walks away from the servants and he leaves them behind because he knows that if those servants go with him, that when he begins to bind Abraham and is going to sacrifice him, those servants will think that he has lost his mind and they will stop him. They will restrain him. And so he leaves the servants behind. And God doesn't stop him when he's walking with Isaac or when Isaac says, Father, we have the wood and the fire, but where is the lamb for sacrifice? And God doesn't stop him until he raises the knife. And according to Hebrews 11 and 19, in Abraham's mind, Isaac is as good as dead. I wonder how many of us, ladies and gentlemen, would have chosen obedience that day. And I wonder how many of us as parents would have chosen disobedience that day. Disobedience is easy. Disobedience is painless. Disobedience is comfortable. And disobedience would have seemed reasonable. I wonder how many of us would have reasoned about that and said, you know, listen, I know what God said. I know it was the voice of God. I understand what he said. But if Isaac is dead, how will he fulfill the promise? How many times do we reason that way? As we talked the other night, how many times do we reason and we say, you know what? It seems to me, this makes sense to me. I know what God said, but this is what makes more sense to me. You see, disobedience is easy because we often don't feel like obeying. We don't feel like being kind or being hospitable or being forgiving. We don't feel like being Christ-like or being responsible or being honest. In other words, oftentimes we don't feel like doing or being the very thing that God calls upon us to do or be in the situation. But Abraham passes this final exam, and so can we. The point that we want to make simply tonight is that as we make our way from earth to heaven, it doesn't matter whether you are 18 or 80, there are going to be challenges that will be formidable. And so, could I just leave you tonight with three simple thoughts as we are heaven bound? Three simple things quickly, and the lesson's yours. Here they are. Number one, challenges will be from this day forward. There are going to be challenges from this day forward. Your greatest challenge may still be ahead of you. I want you to think about that. If you're a young person, I can almost guarantee you that your greatest challenge is still going to be ahead of you. But even if you're an older person in this audience, your greatest challenge may still be ahead of you. There are going to be challenges from this day forward. Now, those challenges may be like Abraham. They may be intensely personal, intensely emotional, and challenge everything you know and believe. I think that it's easy for us to reach a point in life where we believe that surely the worst challenges are behind us. I mean, Abraham had to think that all along the way. I mean, you know that he had to think, look, being told to leave my home in Ur of the Chaldees and then to leave the people that I love and to leave everything that I am comfortable with. He must have thought all along the way, that has to be the end of it. Surely there's no more challenge after that. And what he found is an old man, 120 years old, that the greatest challenge was still before him. Can be for us as well. Now, that may be a serious accident. It may be a debilitating illness. It may be an aging parent for whom we must care. It may be a broken relationship. It may be, and you can just fill in the blank. It's easy for us to think that we will never face anything in our lives any more significant than what we have already passed through in life. But Abraham teaches us otherwise. And Abraham teaches us, don't miss this, please. Abraham teaches us that what we have endured in the past prepares us for whatever the challenge may be in the future. Look at the screen with me for just a second. At the end of the mountain message, Jesus is concluding things, and here's the way that he begins to wrap things up. He says, therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. Now listen to what he said. The rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall because it was founded upon a rock. Now, I've got to tell you, that's more than just a song that we teach our little kids to sing in their classes with those wonderful little hand motions that they love so much. There's a principle there, and the principle is that in every life, rain is going to fall and wind is going to blow and floods are going to rise, and it doesn't matter who you are. It is inevitable. Nobody gets out of this life unscathed. Now listen, if you've listened to me thus far tonight, and if you've listened to me thus far and said, you know what, Don, I understand what you're saying, but that's really not me. If you've lived kind of a Teflon-coated life and nothing bad has ever stuck to you in life, God bless you in that. And thank God for that. But I want to tell you, there are very few people who get out of this life unscathed. And Jesus says, you need to be building your life on something that will last, because inevitably, some rain is going to fall and wind's going to blow and floods are going to rise. And so that would mean, secondly, that your greatest challenge can only be met when you've overcome some lesser challenges. Your greatest challenge is met by success with lesser challenges. In every life, your life, my life, there are hundreds of smaller challenges that prepare us for the greater challenges. Now, a lot of the smaller challenges, we don't give much thought to. We just deal with them. They're just part and parcel of everyday life. And so we deal with them and then we move on and we don't really think much about them. But every time we do that, every time we overcome one of the smaller challenges, it prepares us for one of the greater challenges. I want you to think about Abraham with me for just a minute. God did not start with Abraham by saying, first thing, I want you to sacrifice your boy. That's not where God began with Abraham. God began with Abraham by saying, Abraham, I want you to leave Ur of the Chaldees. And then he said, I want you to leave your homeland behind you. And then he said, I want you to leave your people behind in Haran. And then he said, I want you to leave your son Ishmael. And then he said, I want you to leave your nephew Lot. And every time that God told him to leave something, he was preparing him for the time that he would say, finally, Abraham, I want you to leave your son Isaac. And what did Abraham learn from all of those earlier challenges? He learned that God was there, that God is good, that God is true, that God would stand by his side. And ladies and gentlemen, before you and I will face our greater challenges, we will encounter hundreds of other challenges. And maybe in your life that's been the challenge of trying to talk to non-Christian relatives who don't really appreciate your faith, and they treat you differently now that you've become a Christian. Or maybe it's leaving a place that you love, where you have lived and you've loved, but you are going to take a job that you need somewhere else. Or maybe it means that you have to leave a church family where this is all you've known, and these people are all you've known, and you are comfortable here, but you've got to go somewhere else because of a life circumstance. Or maybe it's a thousand other smaller challenges, but each one of them makes you stronger, and each one of them helps you see and appreciate the hand of God. And each one of them is getting you ready for a time that you will face a challenge in your life that may well knock you to your knees and make you wonder if you will survive. Your greatest challenge will be met because you've had success with the lesser challenges of life. And third and finally tonight, your greatest challenge will require your greatest help. And I want you to listen carefully to what we're about to say. Your greatest challenge will require your greatest help. It's interesting that Abraham learned three things about his faith. He learned first that he was willing to completely surrender his will to God. What he wanted, he was willing to surrender to God. No father wants to sacrifice his son. But he learned about himself that he was willing to completely surrender his will to God. He learned that he was willing to completely obey God, regardless of how he felt about that. And he learned that he was willing to completely trust God, that God would fulfill his word. Now, he may not understand how, but Abraham believed that if Isaac was the son of promise and God promised that through him, the promises were going to be fulfilled, he believed that God would make that happen, even though he may not understand how. Again, that understanding and faith and surrender and obedience and trust did not come on the first day of his introduction to God. Abraham, who grew up in a pagan home, he didn't understand that on day one of his faith in Yahweh. It came day by day and week by week, month by month and year by year of walking with God. And when Abraham offers his son, and at the last moment, when God stays his hand, God says, now I know. Now I know. What a tremendous testimony of his conviction. But I want to tell you that God wasn't the only one who knew some things that day. Abraham knew that day. And our adversary, the devil, knew something about Abraham that day. And Isaac knew something about his dad that day. And I will tell you that the servants, when they heard about this, they knew something about Abraham that day. And Sarah, when she learned about this, she knew something about her husband that day. There were a lot of people that learned some lessons that day because this man would completely surrender and completely obey and completely trust. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, we read that story in Genesis 22, and we read it, and we think about it, and we say, well, but you know what, Don? If God spoke to me like he did to Abraham, then I would obey him without any questions, too. If God would just speak to me like he did to Abraham. But ladies and gentlemen, hasn't God spoken to us with equal clarity in his word? I mean, isn't the voice of God heard with equal clarity as it was for Abraham that day? I mean, hasn't God said to us plainly, look, don't ever lie. Hasn't God said clearly, don't be unequally yoked together with an unbeliever? Hasn't God clearly said, you've got to forgive others in order for me to forgive you? Hasn't God clearly said, I need you to love your enemies? Hasn't God said, I want you to encourage rather than discourage? Hasn't God said, leave judging to me? Hasn't God said, I want you to give rather than hoard and be selfish? Hasn't God spoken with equal clarity? Maybe you listen to that and you say, well, I know that that's what God said, but I don't think I can do that. Yes, you can. In Philippians 4 and 13, the Apostle Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Those words were not written for an athlete to speak at the end of a ball game when they've scored the winning touchdown. Now, I appreciate the sentiment. I just want to thank my Lord Jesus Christ because I can do all things through Jesus Christ who strengthens me. I think God has greater items on his plate than whether you win a football game or not. Appreciate the sentiment. The application, I think, is askew. But when we look at those commands of God that challenge us to the depth of who we are, when we listen to God and we hear his voice and his voice clearly says those things, don't lie. I don't care what the circumstance is. Don't lie. When he says, I want you to forgive, when it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, to forgive somebody, and he says, that's what I want you to do. When God says, I want you to leave judging to me, those things sometimes that are so hard, and we say, I'm not sure that I can do that. Paul says, you can do it through Jesus Christ. We want to get even, God says to forgive. We want to be served, and God says to serve. We want to accumulate, and God says to give. We want to give blame to others, and God says, I want you to take responsibility. We want green pastures, and God says, sometimes there are going to be dark valleys and tables before your enemies. How in the world do you do that? You can do it through Jesus Christ who strengthened you. But let's be really clear about that tonight. If you don't have a daily relationship with him, then you're not going to have his strength when the crisis comes. If you're not building day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, a relationship with God Almighty and with his son, Jesus Christ, then you're not going to have strength when the crisis comes in your life. You're going to be looking around for something to stand on, and it won't be there because you haven't developed it. One author said it this way, your daily walk will determine the outcome of your biggest test. Why? Because, ladies and gentlemen, and don't miss this, please, because the great tests in life don't create your character. They reveal your character. They reveal who you are and in whom you've placed your trust. And so again, your greatest challenge will require your greatest help. And the greatest help is your God. Moses stood in front of a bush that was burning, but it was not consumed, and he was amazed by that. And the voice from the bush commissioned Moses. Moses, who spent 80 years in preparation for the call that he is just about to get, but the call that he gets is daunting, and it shakes him to the core of who he is, because God says, I want you to go back where you grew up. And I want you to go to the most powerful monarch on the planet, and I want you to say to him, let my people go. And Moses knows Pharaoh, and he knows how he will respond to that. And he says, when I go, and he asks me who has sent me, what shall I say? And God said, you tell him that I am has sent you. He said, for I am that I am. Your greatest challenge will require your greatest help. And your greatest help is what we sing. The great I am. I am Yahweh our God is the answer. When my life falls apart, who's going to stand with me? And God says, I am. Who's going to make sure that one day truth will prevail over evil? And God says, I am. And who's smart enough to figure this out? And God says, I am. What if my family fails me? Who's going to take care of me then? I am. What if the chemo's not enough? I am. What if the surgery isn't a success? I am. Who's going to stay with me in this empty house now that my mate is gone? And God says, I am. Who's going to lift me out of this pit of despair? I am. The world seems to be crumbling around me. What's going to last? I am. Nobody's listening. I am. Nobody's giving me friendship. I am. No one's on my side. I am. Oh God, I need someone to help me. I am. My family deserves better than I have given them. I am. God, who is going to make sense of this world and give it meaning? I am. And God says, I always have been. And I always will be. And ladies and gentlemen, the greatest challenge that you will ever face will require the help of the great I am. What kind of a God would ask a man to sacrifice his son? And the answer is, a God who would do the same. So Moses came to Mount Moriah, which we are told in 1 Chronicles 3 is in the vicinity of Jerusalem. And centuries later, God would send his son to the vicinity of Jerusalem as well. And like Isaac, his boy was a son of promise. And like Isaac, he would carry the instrument of execution to the place of his sacrifice. But God would not stop the execution of his son. And as Isaac was raised figuratively from the dead, God would raise his boy from the dead literally. That's the kind of God we serve. Kind of sacrifice that he would make in order to be our greatest help as we are heaven bound. How about you tonight? Maybe you're in this audience and you've never been obedient to God in the water of baptism. There'll never be a better time for you to do that than tonight. By God's providence, you are surrounded tonight by people who care about you, love you, who will encourage you and help you in every way possible as we make our way together from earth to heaven. And maybe you're a Christian, and you haven't lived like Abraham. You haven't surrendered and been obedient, and you haven't trusted. And maybe you've gone in that way that seems right to you, even though it's antithetical to the way of God. Maybe you've done that. You need to come home to him tonight. Because again, here you are, by God's providence, surrounded by people who are not going to put you on spiritual probation. They're not going to hold you at arm's length. They're going to embrace you and love you, help you and encourage you as together we are heaven bound. And so if there's a response you need to make to God tonight in a public way, we can help you. Please let us. Let's stand.